Vrindigija.
Bhadhira.
Death. Pishacha. Ghost. Unnadaka. A madman. But like. Avadhutaveshaha. Appearing like an avadhuta. Having no concern with the material world. Abhibhashamanaha. Being thus addressed as deaf, dumb, and blind. Api, although, jananam, by the people. Grihita, took. Mona, of silence. Vrataha, the vow. Tushnim bahuva, he remained silent. It's a translation. After accepting the feature of an avadhuta, a great saintly person without material cares, Lord Rishabhadeva passed through human society like a blind, deaf, and dumb man, an idle stone, a ghost, or a madman. Although people called him such names, he remained silent and did not speak to anyone. So, purport by his Navangre, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The word avadhuta refers to one who does not care for social conventions, particularly the varnashram dharma. However, such a person may be situated fully within himself and be satisfied with the Supreme Personality of Godhead on whom he meditates. In other words, one who has surpassed the rules and regulations of varnashram dharma is called avadhuta. Such a person has already surpassed the clutches of Maya, and he lives completely separate and independent. So, Jiranda Mukha Badira Pishachonada Kapad Abadutta Vesho Abhivashyamano Pijananam Grihita Mona Vratastushnim Bakuva. So, Omagana Tibiranda Shah Gadanjana Shilakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena. So, technically speaking, the word avadhuta means wind. And sometimes it refers to one of the life airs. There's a life air called the avadhuta wind. So the reason the word avadhuta here is used for a person who has surpassed the rules and regulations of all sorts of life, you know, varnashram dharma, the reason is because he just flows like the wind. He goes anywhere, anything. He doesn't have to do anything. Just like the wind, there's no restriction for the wind. Right? You can't restrict the wind. I mean, it's impossible. It just goes wherever. You can talk to the wind. It doesn't matter. It's just going to blow. Like last night, there was a lot of wind blowing, right? There was a storm. You all heard the storm? And it was blowing. There's nothing you can do about it, right? It's just blowing everywhere, inside, outside. So, a person who is actually transcendental sometimes takes this particular external manifestation. Of course, the most famous avadhuta is Lord Nityananda. He's the most famous. I mean, you'll see many things that Lord Nityananda did that were completely wild. I mean, just like, huh? How could he do such a thing? I mean, for example, I mean, one of the things was Lord Nityananda was a sannyasi. He was called Nityananda Gosai. And then, of course, when he met Lord Chaitanya, he was sannyasi. And then Lord Chaitanya sent him back to West Bengal, and he got married. And not only married one lady, he married two ladies. Janava and Masada. And not only that, he had a child, Virabhadra, who's considered also Balaram, Nityananda's Balaram, of course, Balaram Hoila Nittai, and Virabhadra is also considered an expansion or an appearance of Balaram Nityananda. So you're thinking, huh, how is this possible? I mean, if someone in the Krishna consciousness movement does that, it's just like, huh? You know, what's happening? You know, when there's a sannyasi, next day he comes and introduces you to his wife. I mean, it's I mean, we're very merciful. Prabhupada was very merciful, but at the same time, it's called, when a sannyas gives up sannyas, it's called vitangsi. Anyone's heard that word before? Vitangsi means basically one who regurgitates. I'm going to use a nicer word than Prabhupada used. Prabhupada used a word that's much more picturesque. But I'm using a medical term right here. Regurgitation, right? The doctors say that. So one who regurgitates and then takes up what he has regurgitated. I mean, it's just like, it's a disgrace to society, basically speaking. So here you have Lord Nityananda doing that. And he was the primary preacher in West Bengal. And Lord Chaitanya never chastised him for getting married. It's just like, that's Lord Nityananda. And even years before that, Lord Nityananda did things that were completely more wild than that. Even more wild. For example, Lord Nityananda would always go over to the house of Srivas Thakur. And he treated Srivas Thakur as his father, and Malini, Srivas Thakur's wife, as his mother. And one reason for that, let's regress a little bit in the story, was that one time Srivas Thakur's son died in the middle of kirtan, and Srivas Thakur didn't want to disturb Lord Chaitanya's kirtan. And Lord Chaitanya basically brought the kid back to life for a few seconds, and the kid began to speak some spiritual knowledge, and then the kid died again. So Lord Chaitanya said, because you were so devoted to me, myself and Lord Nityananda will become your two sons. But Lord Nityananda really took it literally. I mean, more than Lord Chaitanya did. Lord Nityananda would go to the house of Srivas Thakur, and remember, he was quite tall. We would say he's like 7 feet tall, which basically means like 2 meters, a little bit, two and a half meters of tall. And he would sit on the lap of Srivas Thakur's wife, Malini. You know, can you imagine? You go to someone's house. I mean, just like an adult. Imagine, I go to someone's house, and I sit on Vishwanath's mother's lap. You know, it'd be all over Facebook after a few. I get in trouble with the GVC. I mean, And then Lord Nityananda, not only that, he would be fed and even breastfed by Malini. It was just like, it's wild what he did, isn't it? But he's Lord Nityananda. And he is entitled, he's Krishna. He's Krishna himself, expansion of Krishna. He's entitled. Just like Krishna did things that were beyond the purview of Varnashram Dharma. Imagine Krishna did dancing with so many ladies in the middle of the night. Right? So many gopis. A big rasa dance in the middle of the night, calling them out with his flute. Imagine if we had something like that. Imagine if some body in the ashram was playing a flute in the middle of the night. And all the brahmacharinis came out. What would we do with such a person? Anyway, he plays his flute, the brahmacharinis come out. And then in the middle of the temple room, he's dancing. In the middle of the night, we see the lights on in the temple. And I look from my room and I see so-and-so is dancing with all... I think, it might be very difficult for me to accept that. So basically, Krishna does act above the rules and regulations of ordinary morality. Of course, in one sense, you can say he sets the rules of morality. And in another sense, no one else is married to women except for him anyway, because he's the Purusha. He's the supreme male. Actually, in the spiritual world, there's this question brought up the other day. About male and female being illusory. It's not actually illusory. The material manifestation is illusory, but in the spiritual world there is a full expression of masculinity in Krishna and femininity in Radharani and the gopis. And even the coward boys, they're men too. So it's not just an illusory thing that people are male or female. But it's different. It's not based on the body. It's not based on the body or the hormones. You know, basically, the male and female expression in this material world is based upon chemicals circulating within the body. You know, the male hormone, just like if someone's very masculine, they have more of this testosterone, right? It's like someone may go to Rupanuga and say, I want to become more of a man. So he gives them a testosterone injection. I don't know if he actually does that, but in America it happens like that. They go, like that. And then the hair starts to grow on their face and everything like that. And this, so it's all based upon chemistry. So in the spiritual world, the spiritual body does have a gender, but that is based upon love of Krishna. It's based upon seva or service. So that's avaduta. So that avaduta process is not for us. Doing what Lord Rishabhadev has done, Lord Nityananda has done, will not lead us to renunciation. It will lead us to insanity. I've seen many devotees before, when I joined the movement, people had this concept that if they engaged in not even austerities like this, but just like simple austerities, like reducing their eating too much. We had one devotee, he went on an orange diet. You know, he thought he would just eat oranges for 2 months and become Krishna conscious. And so at the end of the 2 months, we basically had to take him to a psychiatrist because he was crazy. So if one engages in austerities and they're not situated properly, then they go crazy or they become lusty or some other deviation from a normal life. So it is not a process. These austerities are not a process to make one renounced. Although sometimes we have certain injunctions that gradually help one become renounced. For example, when one takes the sannyas order of life, there are different orders of sannyas, like Bahuda, Kutichak, Paravajakacharya, and finally Paramahansa. This is part of the Varnashram system. Like, for example, if one first takes sannyas, and we don't follow this exactly in ISKCON, but when one first takes sannyas in the Vedic concept, he's still attached to eating opulent food cooked by his wife. I mean, you can't do so. You ever heard this expression, cold turkey? No, you never heard of that expression, cold. It's a saying that when someone is addicted to a certain drug, you can't really just like take them off the drug right away or else they die. Let's say heroin or some other heavy drug like that. Because then they start shaking, they have fevers. You ever have people like that here in Fiji? You have no drug problems here. Yeah, Fiji, nobody takes marijuana, nobody takes any of these drugs. Yeah, it's a good country. So therefore they put the person on some other drug to gradually take them off of the addiction. Like with the heroin, they put them on something called methadone. You ever heard of that before? They have that here? Like, no. No, it's like a little lesser thing. And then they gradually reduce. So you don't want someone, if you just take them off something right away, they just go, like if I say to you, no opulent food today, you'll go crazy. You may jump into the ocean. I mean, God knows what you're going to do. So therefore, we say, you know, eat one less jalebi today. And tomorrow, one less. And tomorrow, one less roti. And the next day, no rotis. We don't have to go that far. But so in the typical sannyas scenario, is that when one first takes sannyas, he's still addicted to eating very opulent food, cooked by his wife. And so he doesn't eat at the same table with his family anymore. He stays at the edge of the village, and his sons bring him what his wife has cooked. And so every day they're bringing, you know, here's what your wife cooked. And then the next day, not the next day, but the next procedure is, then he does the manukari. He's still thinking of food. So he's going door to door and saying, can I have a chapati? Or can I have some gulab jamuns? Can I have some pizza? Manukari means like a bee. A bee is not supposed to eat a lot or take a lot of pollen in one flower. He takes a little bit from each flower. So then he becomes gradually more renounced. And then he becomes Paravajapacharya. which means he travels everywhere preaching Krishna consciousness and depending on Krishna for the food. He doesn't make any endeavor. You know, where's my food? You don't see him at the supermarket. And then in the final stage of sannyasa is paramahansa, where one just lives in one place, and if food comes, it's all right, and if food doesn't come, it's all right. He just absorbs. He doesn't have any more need for social interaction either. So this is a gradual, authorized process for becoming renounced. And actually, what gets one to the stage of renunciation is not the giving up of things, but the accepting of things. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayati Asu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayad Ahoitutam. That Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. So Bhakti literally means devotion, but unalloyed devotion. So when one is immersed in love, then one naturally becomes renounced from this material world. And when one is in love, one changes their identity. Even in the material world, you see that when people are in love, they actually change their identity, even change their last name sometimes. Right? Isn't it? People get married, they change their last name. Previously it was Mr. Patel, and then it becomes Mr. Sharma, or Mrs. Sharma, or something like that. Not from Mr. and Mrs., I'm sorry. It becomes Miss Patel to Miss Sharma. Sorry. I was doing a gender change there. That's not from Fiji. So they even change their identity. They change where they live. They physically look different when you fall in love, right? So when you fall in love with Krishna, you actually change your identity. I mean, first of all, you take initiation, and your name previously was whatever it is, you know, Joe or Bill or whatever it was, and then it becomes Krishna Das. So that's the first stage. You understand? Krishna Das, I'm the servant of Krishna. And then after that, you develop your spiritual identity further and further. And when your spiritual identity is fully developed and you're identifying with your spiritual body, then it's like the coconut that is detached, you know, the inside of the coconut that's detached from the outside of the coconut has no more attachment, even though it's inside the coconut. You follow? You know, an old coconut like that. So then you have someone like Ramananda Roy, who shows the utmost in detachment. There's the story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Ramananda Roy, or let's talk a little more about the story. Prajuna Mishra, one of Lord Chaitanya's associates, wanted to hear from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about the same topics that were spoken in Vijayanagar about Radha and Krishna. And those topics were spoken between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy. And in that particular instance, Lord Chaitanya took the position of student and Ramananda Roy took the position of professor. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kept asking Ramananda Roy questions. This is a famous conversation called the Ramananda Samvada. So Lord Chaitanya said, you know, what is the highest goal in life? And what is the process to reach the highest goal? And Ramananda Roy first said, testing his student, he said, Varnashram. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected that. And then Ramananda Roy said, renouncing Varnashram. And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected that. And then he said, yat karoshi yadashnashi yat jahoshi dadashya, offering everything to Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya said, that's good, but that's very external. That can also be karma yoga. In other words, one can have some ulterior purpose or personal motivation. And Lord Chaitanya rejected that. And ultimately, they came to the highest stage of describing Radharani's love for Krishna, which is called Mahabhav, the highest stage of the highest rasa. So Prajuna Mishra, he wanted to hear about these topics. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent him to see Ramananda Roy. So he went to Ramananda Roy's place, and Ramananda Roy wasn't there, and Ramananda Roy's servant was there. And Ramananda Roy's servant said to Prajuna Mishra that Ramananda Roy, he's engaged in teaching the Devidasis. There's the temple dancers. In India, that's a tradition. They would keep ladies who were completely chaste and devoted to the deities, and they would dance and do service for the deities. Nowadays, it's turned into something different. Yeah, something not so nice, this Devidasa thing. But in those days, it was actually something very chaste. The ladies would only dance for the deities. They wouldn't, it wasn't like a public performance. They would dance in front of everybody, but just for Lord Jagannath. So, Prajuna Mishra was told by Ramananda Roy's servant that Ramananda Roy is engaged in teaching the ladies how to dance, and he's dressing them properly and everything like that. And so Prajuna Mishra waited a while. Ramananda Roy came back, but it was too late. And Ramananda Roy said, "I'm sorry I kept you waiting. What have you come for?" Prajuna Mishra said, "I just came to see you because there was no time." And he offered his obeisances, went back to Lord Chaitanya. Then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Prajuna Mishra, "Have you heard about Krishna from Ramananda Roy?" And Prajuna Mishra described, "When I went there, he was engaged in teaching the Devidasis how to dance and, you know, doing all, you know, bathing them and dressing them. So here's a man teaching women how to dance and dressing them, bathing them and everything, like putting oil on their bodies." And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "I'm a renounced sannyasi, and, you know, I can't do what Ramananda Roy does. But Ramananda Roy has a special prerogative, because he's not identifying himself in the external manifestation. He identifies himself as a servant of Radharani. Of course, we know Ramananda Roy is Vishakha in Krishna Leela. And so Krishna and Radharani, they associate, and Radharani's two main associates are Lalita and Vishakha. Surup Damodar Goswami, the other associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was Lalita. So you have Lalita and Vishakha with Krishna, who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So Lord Chaitanya said, this is the special prerogative of Ramananda Roy, because he's not identifying himself externally, and he's able to personally touch and bathe the ladies and not feel the least disturbance. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "You know, I'm a sannyasi, but even if I see the form of a lady, I would get disturbed." And Lord Chaitanya said that. Because, of course, Lord Chaitanya is God. It's not a fact, but he was acting to teach us a lesson. And that lesson is what? Balaman Indriya Grama Vidvan Idhikarshate. That means Balaban Indriya Grama. The senses are so strong that even if someone is very learned, what? They will steal one's intelligence away. Senses are so strong. We should never trust them. Just like if you're there's an example in Las Vegas. Okay, let's give a Las Vegas example. Once upon a time there was this magician. And he, one of his acts on the stage in Las Vegas, he had this lion or tiger. It was a tiger. And so every time he would go on the stage and play with the tiger, and everyone was so amazed and everything. Wow, what a nice tiger. But then he was inattentive one day, and guess what happened? The tiger bit him. Not only bit him, it dragged him off stage. And he had to go to the hospital for a long time. So the example given is that upon taming your senses, you should still never trust them. In other words, you may have control of your senses at this point, but don't trust them. Don't trust them, because their nature is to mislead you. The material senses, their nature is to mislead you. Just like Prabhupada told the story one time, there was a cow and a scorpion. You know the scorpion? Do you have scorpions here in Fiji? Scorpion is a little creature that if it bites you, some of them can kill you. Bit you, evil? Yeah. So in India they have scorpions, plenty of scorpions in India. And also Australia they have scorpions. And some places in the United States we have scorpions. South America they have scorpions, big ones. And they have also the piranha fish that eat people. In South America, really ferocious animals. So anyway, so Prabhupada told the story. There was a scorpion and a cow, and they both wanted to cross the river. And the scorpion said to the cow, "You know, you're bigger than me. You know, whoever heard of a scorpion swimming across the river?"
but a cow can walk across because it wasn't that deep. So let me ride on your back. And the cow said, it's not a good idea, you're going to bite me. And the scorpion said, basically, if I bit you, we both die. So I'm not going to bite you, don't worry, cow. And so the cow said, yeah, that makes sense. So the cow went into the river, the scorpion was on the back of the cow, and they were crossing halfway through the river. The scorpion didn't bite, it was stung. It's not that they bite, they have a stinger at the end of their tail. And the cow and the scorpion started to drown because the cow was dying. And the cow said, what did you do? You're killing both of us. How could you? I thought you promised this. And the scorpion said, it was my habit. I'm sorry. I apologize. Please accept my humble obeisances. I apologize. So the point is that the senses have some habits to them. So we should not trust. The example is given also in the Vedic literatures, and the Bhagavatam says, upon taming a wild animal, you still shouldn't trust the wild animal. That's a very important point. So Balaman Indra Grama, Vidvan Evahi Kashati. That even if you're very intelligent, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, you know, because it's senses you should never trust. Now, if you're like with Ramananda Roy, a perfectly pure devotee, I mean, Vishaka, how can we even compare? Then he was identifying with his spiritual body. So that was complete renunciation. And ultimately, if we perform devotional service, we'll have that complete renunciation too. However, we should know what platform we're at. We should be honest with ourselves. And therefore, Prabhupada wanted to institute Varnashram Dharma. Even though Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, going back to what I just spoke about with the discussion between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected Varnashram Dharma, saying it's external. Prabhupada said, we accept Varnashram Dharma. Lord Chaitanya was nirapeksha. He was not interested in this world. Srila Prabhupada said, we are interested in this world to bring people to Krishna consciousness. Because we have to have a stable society where Dharma is followed in order to have people progress gradually. Like we mentioned, becoming renounced gradually. And we should not artificially, just like we've seen in our movement, some people have artificially taken sannyas or artificially been given positions and they can't make it, or artificially taken up more renunciation than they can take up. So one should be very careful not to eat too much, eat too little, or do anything, or sleep too much, or sleep too little, or be put in a situation, or take up a situation, where they cannot maintain long term. Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments on this in his Chaitanya Shikshamrita, that one has to identify their needs and deal with their needs so they can progress gradually to the stage of renunciation. I remember in the early days of the movement that when I joined, we all thought we were completely renounced. I mean, new brahmacharis, you know, 2 weeks in the movement thought, you know, we're no longer interested in this world. And I remember it was a story in Lotukka. There was a group of brahmacharis here who just took vows never to get married, right? I won't mention their names. But they took vows never to get married. And now, I think they're all married now, right? Or at least hoping to get married. So one has to really, you know, immaturely we misunderstand what our actual position in Krishna consciousness. We think that we're actually more advanced than we are. And we saw that happen when Prabhupada left the planet. There were people, you know, some of the people who took up the service of being gurus thought they were more advanced than they actually were, and then they just didn't make it in Krishna consciousness. They accepted too much. Like Prabhupada said, generally a spiritual master shouldn't accept too many disciples. Now, one is acharya, like Srila Prabhupada, there's no limit to the disciples that they can accept. But as far as someone who is simply representing the acharya and acting as a spiritual master, then there should be some limitation as far as what they can do. And if they don't do that, then they will have some spiritual difficulty. So This is important as far as renunciation. Don't become an avaduta. We even had one devotee who was named avaduta. It wasn't my disciple. And he actually acted like an avaduta. And it aggravated the hell out of me. Because he wasn't qualified. You know, he got married, and then somehow or other his wife didn't please him. And then, you know, so many things happened. I'm not even going to talk about him. He's in a different country. But he a different country. He's actually from South America. So don't be an avaduta. Follow the rules and regulations. Understand varnashram, varnashram dharma. Very important. Stick to your ashram. If you're a sannyasi, be careful. If you're a brahmachari, don't be a single daddy. Like Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said it's better to remain brahmachari, but if you're going to be a single daddy, don't get married. And if you're married, stick to your dharma there. And if you're varnaprastha, stick to your dharma. And if you're a brahmin, stick to your dharma. And if it's a kshatriya, stick to your dharma. So varnashram dharma. So any questions or comments about any of these points? So this is a little commentary on the avaduta, Lord Rishabhadeva manifestation. Any questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues, requests? No? Everyone's so quiet here. I mean, this is America. I'd have arguments right now. Isn't it? I mean, it's just like, huh? You know, even if I give class in Mayapur, I have so many questions that will come up. You know, the class will go on forever, never, never. Yeah, so the devotee should read Bhagavatam and not be shy about asking questions. I mean, there's some things I said that may be a little controversial. But one has to understand, the main thing is one has to understand the limitations of what they can do. Yeah. No one should be teaching dancing girls how to dance. And actually, the stricture that no man should be alone with a woman who's not his wife is an important restriction, because Balaban Indra Grama would by the name of Vikashita. Yeah, what's the question?
Why is it sometimes the Srimad Bhagavatam texts they spoken instead of sung?
Right? You mean it in prose instead of poetry?
Yes, yes.
You'll have to ask Vyasadeva that. That's just the way it is. I mean, Prabhupada hasn't given us an explanation why it's that way in the fifth canto, a large part of the fifth canto. Vyasadeva was just like, decided to do it like that. Vyasadeva and Shukadeva Goswami and the Acharyas decided to do it like that. It's prose. I mean, just like in any book, sometimes you'll have poetry and then sometimes you'll have prose. Generally, it's poetry. Rupa Goswami, he's perhaps the most expert in poetry. When he writes his poetry, you can take the poem, many poems, and turn them backwards, and they mean the same thing. You ever seen this? I have a whole demonstration of this that I could do, but there's no time to do it with a PowerPoint. How he has poetry, and you read the same way backwards, or reads some of them read the same way crossways. Some of them make the sign of a drum, and it reads the same way that way. And some it's amazing. Some of them make the sign of a chakra, and each if you read it backwards or forwards or this way or that way, it means the same thing. I mean, when you hear or see the analysis of Rupa Goswami's poetry, you'd be amazed, understanding that there's no one, no person in this world from the material world as intelligent as Rupa Goswami and the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, isn't it? Has anyone ever seen this analysis? Did you ever see that analysis? Maybe if we had some time here, one night or one time, we can actually show you the whole analysis we've done of his poetry. There's different formations. He has different formations. It's really wonderful. Rupa Goswami, his writing is described like rows of, Lord Chaitanya said, it's like rows of pearls strung. It's very beautiful writing. So our acharyas, we have a lot to be proud of. Our acharyas are very amazing. There have not been such intelligent people anywhere in the world as Rupa Goswami, what's his name? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't leave us much writing. He has his Shikshashtaka. But like Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, and Sanatana Goswami, you will not find such manifestations of intelligence, poetry, metaphorical use anywhere in any other culture. I challenge you. I challenge you to find that. Nowhere in any other culture. So we have a lot, in our heritage, we have a lot to be proud of. And we're followers of Rupa Goswami. So any questions or comments? Mr. Dr. Rupanuga. Yeah. Yes.
What is the approach that we should take to establish our ashram dharma?
Well, there's two aspects of our ashram dharma. One is varna and one is ashram. Varna means basically what is the work that you are attracted to, your psychophysical nature. That's the varna. You know, the Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. And this means that most people in modern society will be the Vaishyas or Shudras, a lot of Shudras, which means that basically most people, and this is going to come as a shock, should be engaged in working the land. You understand? The Vaishyas, Krishi Gauraksha Banijan Vaishya Kamas Vubhavajan. The Vaishyas authorized process of maintaining themselves is taking care of cows and also some commerce. But that doesn't mean banking, or the type of banking we have today. Vaishya would be exchanging goods. Not like the current system of banking is based upon, like Prabhupada said, you're putting an artificial value on something that doesn't exist. On paper, for example, like in America, I'm not going to talk about Fiji, but in America you have the American dollar. And what is the value? It's just based on people's faith in it. That's all it's based on, you know, faith in the dollar. And nowadays, people don't even exchange physical money on the big scale anymore. It's all computer entries, isn't it, Vishwanath? You know, we're talking about really, really rich people. You don't see them walking around with cash. It's all computerized, you know, credit card, bank statements, and basically they don't see money. You know, really rich people basically don't see very much money, because it's all on paper. So it's an artificial imposition. And when people lose faith in the currency, what happens? Does anyone know what happens when people lose faith in the currency? It's a technical word, inflation. In other words, the currency becomes worthless. And before World War II in Germany, people had to take literally carloads of money and to buy one loaf of bread, because they had no more faith in the currency. So it's all based on faith. There's faith that the dollar means something instead of a gold standard. Usually 100 or 200 years ago there was a gold standard, so you could take your money and exchange it for gold. But now the gold is so expensive, obviously, I guess in Fiji dollars it would be like almost 4,000 Fiji dollars for an ounce of gold, right? Maybe 3,800 or something. So it's all artificial. So the real wealth is land and cows. And gold, of course, and cloth and other things like that. And that's a Vaishya. So the people would mainly, in the Varnashram culture, the main business of people would be most people would be on the land. The Shudras would also work the land. They'd serve the Vaishyas. Like Nanda Maharaj, he was Vaishya. Krishna was a Vaishya. There's nothing wrong with it. And then he would, isn't it, taking care of, what would Krishna do every day? Could he go to the bank? Krishna said goodbye to Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, and then went, put on his tie and jacket as a nice Vaishya, went to the bank and pulled out his computer? No. He took the calves and the cows out with him. He took care of them, right? That's Vaishya. So, in other words, Varnashram culture, you really have to have farm communities. Prabhupada actually talked about it. That was what Prabhupada stressed. I mean, that's not all of Varnashram culture, because you need Brahmins. You also have cities. In Varnashram culture, you had Dwarka. Mathura, all these cities. Cities are also there, but the majority of people are on the farm. And what the British did when they came into India, they wanted to take everyone off the farm. So they instituted this railway system. Everybody went to the cities to make money, because we experienced that in Fiji. Once people come to Suva, they don't go back to the farm, do they? Generally, maybe exception. Once they're here, you know, they can just go to the supermarket. They're not going to go to the papaya tree and pick a papaya. We mentioned this the other day. Isn't it much easier to just go to the supermarket and say, I want a papaya? And, of course, you have to work like an ass doing uber-karmic things. You're sitting in a factory or in your desk all day long just like pushing different keys down on a keyboard. That's ugra karma. It's not good for your health. And therefore you develop all sorts of diseases, hemorrhoids. You have hemorrhoids here? No. Hemorrhoids, heart disease. People are sitting there. And then they have to get a machine so they exercise. Right? They have machines like running machines. They have a treadmill. You have them here in Fiji? So because they're sitting down all day long pushing buttons, they have to get a treadmill at home. They turn on the motor and pay for the electricity. And it's boring as hell to walk on a treadmill, isn't it? And so it's so artificial. And then they have to pay for everything. And every month you get the electric bill, you get the telephone bill, your mobile phone bill, your water bill. You have to work like an ass. And here in Fiji, you could live on the farm, you know, work a few hours a day, and you'll have avocados and everything there for you, and be happy. But because you have this enticement of modern opulence, then you work like an ass. So Varnashram begins, in other words, Varnashram begins with the farm. Prabhupada talked about it. We'll be talking about that in the course, if we get that far. In the evening, how Prabhupada wanted that, you know, farm communities, simple living, high thinking. Unfortunately, because we're all addicted to opulence, we've switched Prabhupada's philosophy around. Instead of simple living, high thinking, we believe in high living, simple thinking. Right? I've seen in ISKCON, when people develop farm communities, what do? They have their big mansions on the farm. In America, we call that McMansions. You know McMansions? Like McDonald's? You know, we have 20 rooms for 3 people. So you could sleep in a different room each night. And you have to hire a maid to clean up the whole thing. And the only person who's enjoying the house is your dog, because he stays home all day long and watches TV. And people are cleaning up after the dog because the dog passes stool and urine everywhere. Isn't it? So what I've seen even with devotees, we have communities outside of cities now, but everybody gets a big house with all the same things in the cities, and nobody does agriculture. I mean, like in our temple in North Carolina, we have a nice garden, but to get someone to grow the flowers, they won't do it. They just like to call on the phone and have the flowers delivered, you know, because they have florists. You know the florist is? They won't even pick the flowers out. Even when they're growing on the temple grounds, I, as a spiritual master, can't get the devotees to pick the flowers. And there's plenty of flowers. They just want to call. Please send a shipment. It'll only cost $150. So every month, we're spending $800 American dollars on flowers when they're growing freely. And you can, during the summer at least. And we even have a greenhouse. But nobody wants to lift their little fingers, their delicate little fingers. No, I'm a Brahmin. I'm supposed to eat on behalf of Krishna. Brahma Bhojana. So basically, they want to become like that person Kabanda in the Ramayana. You know Kabanda? Kabanda was just a big stomach and a mouth. It's a Ramayan story because we're leading up to the Lord Ram's appearance. He was just a big, his arms were 8 miles long. It was just one big mouth, and the mouth was directly on the stomach. didn't even have a digestive tube or anything like that. Just opened up, you could see the stomach every time he opened his mouth. So he would grab things with his 8 mile long arms and stick them into his stomach. So one day he grabbed Lord Ram and Lakshman, and they were all worried, you know, what are we going to do? And so what they did is they chopped his arms off, and then he became a good guy after that. But so that's our Kali Yuga Brahman is that Kabanda. You should call everybody Kabanda, right? Because they just want to eat on behalf of Krishna. And, you know, it comes time to RT, oh, I'm not feeling well today. It's too difficult to lift the incense. Oh, and the bell. Oh. Right? And it's just like, everybody, it was too cold out or something. In Fiji, it's too cold. Yeah, Hare Krishna. So, isn't it? I mean, it's, or Harinam. Oh, those cartels are too heavy. But I'm a Brahmin, so feed me. They're never too sick to eat, right? Okay, enough political statements from the management. Okay, all glorious is time to